one time in Vrindavan, when Krishna and all the cowherd boys were playing, there was one demon who disguised himself as a cowherd boy. And he also joined the group of cowherd boys. And he was playing with everyone. Nobody knew who this demon was except Krishna. And while playing the game, he was catching one cowherd boy at a time, picking them up and putting them on his back, just like cowherd boys would play in a friendly manner with one another. He put them on his back and started running. So cowherd boys never thought that he is going to do anything strange. They thought he is just playful. But then he took them far away into the forest, and there was a mountain cave. He would go take them inside and dump them inside the cave and plug the door of the cave with a big stone. And this he did with practically all the boys, one by one by one. And those boys who were put inside the cave, it was practically pitch dark inside the cave. Nobody could see others. And nobody could see anything. It was all dark. It was practically suffocating. So, when all these boys were, many, many boys were put, so they all were crying and they were calling Krishna's names from the cave for help. So, at last Krishna, after seeing this devilish act of this asura, his name was Vyomasur. Krishna, with his fist, he pounded him and killed him. And went and opened the cave, opened the plug of the cave by removing the stone. And all the cowherd boys came out happily, dancing and singing Krishna's names. So this Vyomasura pastime has a very deep meaning. Just as that asura took the form of a cowherd boy and cheated the other cowherd boys, making them think that he was also one amongst them. Similarly, our own mind, it sometimes tricks us into indulging in non-Krishna conscious activities. Or, as it is said, maneva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayam. Mind is the cause of our bondage. So the demon picked up all of them and put them into the cave. Similarly, our independent desire to enjoy separate from Krishna has brought us into this cave of material world, the dark material world, where no one can be fearless or no one can be happy. Nobody can be fearless in a dark place. So the material world is a dark place. So when the cowherd boys were put inside the cave, they saw everything was dark and nobody could see others properly. Nobody could see themselves. Where are we? How did we come here? How to get out of here? These were the questions. And because Krishna was their intimate friend, and they had firm faith that Krishna can do anything. So when they called out Krishna, Krishna could remove that stone that was used for plugging the cave, which ordinarily cannot be opened by anyone if a huge boulder is closing the cave. In the same manner, the living entity who is thrown, cast into this material world, he cannot deliver himself by his own endeavor. By any amount of endeavor, one cannot get out of this world. One has to know the art of how to get out of this world and join Krishna's pastimes again, happily. So, when the living entities come into this world, they all take to different paths, different methods in order to understand the observe the truth, understand the supreme, and again become liberated, situate oneself in liberated position. All the spiritualists are convinced that there is certainly a state, a liberated state, as it is called, which is a state of complete freedom. And now our freedom is stunted. Everyone knows that. Our freedom is stunted. We are trapped in this material body, owing to which we have so many conditions put upon us. It is as if a person is tied by ropes, hands and legs tied with ropes. He has no freedom. One cannot move hands and legs. Similarly, the living entity also has many, many limitations while he is put in this body. Prabhupada calls them a stringent laws of material nature. Too much cold we cannot tolerate. Too much heat we cannot tolerate. There are threefold miseries which are unbearable. Similarly, the old age and disease and death and everything, it does not allow the soul to remain peaceful and happy. These things are actually tossing us in the waves of duality, sukha and dukkha. Sukha and dukkha, mana, apaman, shita, ushna. These are dualities in this world which are used for constantly subjecting the soul to suffering. So one has to deliver oneself from this world. One has to find out the best method. How can one deliver oneself from this dark, dangerous, fearsome material world? Jnanis and yogis, they endeavor by their personal prowess, austerities, penances, and severe endeavors. They try to go beyond the duality of the material world. If you go to the North India, you will see in Himalayas, and you go to Gangotri or Kedarnath, Badrinath, and such places, you'll find there are jnanis who really torture their bodies. In the hot summer day, days, they put panchagni, they call it. Four sides, there will be fire. And the fifth fire is from the sun. Hot fire all around. And already it is sweating and fuming because of the sun, but they will be putting fire also around their body. Why? In order to go beyond the duality of heat. Because generally when there is heat, what do you try to do? You try to take a cold water bath, isn't it? Or you try to put yourself in AC. So you try to counteract the heat. And when it is very cold in winter, what do? We have a heat pump. We put a heat pump, or sometimes you create a campfire and sit around it so that you can have some heat. So when you try to counteract the duality in nature, that means trying to counteract it, you remain conditioned. You will never go beyond duality because you are trying to counteract sukha and dukkha. That means you will continue this struggle life after life for a long time. But for the jnanis, what they do in order to counteract it, when there is summer heat, what do? They try to put a heat around them. Very strange, no? When there is winter cold, they submerge themselves in Gangotri, chill waters, under the neck. They break the ice and go into the waters. And they remain in that water. So why? Because like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also, sukha and dukkha, they are two sides of the same coin. So when the when one thing comes, when sukha comes, dukkha also comes along with that, Krishna says. Like a shadow following a person. So if you reject the sukha, you can also reject dukkha along with that. That is why the jnanis, what they do, instead of trying to earn sukha, they try to reject both. Because if you reject sukha, you can also reject dukkha. That is the purpose of putting this fire around them or absorbing in chill cold water. While the whole world is covering their body with thick blankets, they will be putting their body in chill cold water. That means they are rejecting the sukh. So when you reject sukh, dukkha also goes along with that. So they are one unit. Sukha and dukkha are one unit. So take this one coin and throw it far away. So that's what they do. So in this way, the jnanis try to reject the duality of the world. So in this sense, they may elevate themselves to some extent. they may be able to tolerate penances and austerities and eating less, sleeping less, living in any place, anywhere, whatever is available. But despite performing such penances and austerities, the best realization they can get is, I am not the body, I am the soul. Not beyond that. They cannot understand what is this world, where are we going, what is moksha, what happens after liberation. Yogis also touch the body a lot. Yama, niyama, pranayama, asana, pratyahara, dharana. Pratyahar, ahar means food. Pratyahar means don't give food to any of the senses, for the eyes, nose, tongue, ears, skin, no food. Shut off all your senses. That is their slogan. Shut off your senses. That is pratyahar. They say unless you do pratyahar, unless you shut off the senses, you cannot go for the further steps. Dharana, dhyana, samadhi. You cannot attain this higher states of meditation unless you shut off your senses. So, many of these jnanis, yogis achieve powers when they get some siddhis, or when they stand out from the masses, they become very proud and they fall victim to their own false pride. And they don't achieve the desired destination. They don't get out of this dangerous cave of material existence. They get stuck up in the material world itself. So they cannot get a very clear understanding of the absolute truth. They have a clouded understanding, a hazy picture of the absolute truth, as the absolute truth is impersonal, or the absolute truth is beyond duality. So we also want to go beyond dualities. That's their understanding. They don't know anything beyond that. So if these covered boys were put inside the cave and they were trying to open the stone by their own endeavor, you can imagine opening a huge boulder which is used for plugging the cave. Nobody can open that themselves. Nor can we make any plan to get out. So one has to know, in the same way, Maya in this world is so powerful. She is holding all the jivas in her grip very firmly, very tightly. Like if you catch a fly and you hold it in the hand like this tightly, the fly has no opportunity to even move the body. What to speak of coming out of the hands. Similarly, we cannot come out of Maya's clutches. Maya is extremely powerful. Unless she takes mercy and releases you. If she releases, you can come out. Otherwise, you can't come out. And she doesn't release anyone so easily. And she doesn't hold a lotus flower in her hand. She is holding a trident, by which you can easily understand. She only pierces the chest of every conditioned soul and giving them pain of the threefold miseries. So one has to know, if God is supreme, then how can he be attained, or how can one draw his attention by which one can get out of this dangerous material world and be with him eternally? Although Krishna is the supreme controller, he's a supreme creator and protector and sustainer and maintainer and possessor of all potencies. Despite being so great, he is equally merciful. That is why he has given the scriptures, the way, the Puran, scriptures. He has given all these things because he is merciful upon the living beings who are his own children. We have to know what can attract the attention of God by which we can easily go back to him. If we see the scriptures, we can come to understand this truth. So Krishna expands as Srimati Radharani, a feminine aspect of the absolute truth. And acharyas have very vividly described about whether absolute truth is male or female. But actually absolute truth is simultaneously male and female when the absolute truth appears as Krishna and Srimati Radharani. You will see when it comes to power or shakti or when it comes to control, Krishna is supreme from the point of view of tattva. From the point of view of leela, Srimati Radharani takes over. She has the extra edge and she is supreme. How she is supreme? It is explained that Krishna is called as a Madan Mohan. He is the cupid who attracts who attracts even the cupid. There is a verse which says, Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. Crores of cupids fall at the feet of Krishna. They salute him. Such is his beauty. But Srimati Radharani is called as Madan Mohan Mohini, which means she attracts even Krishna, which means the devotion of Srimati Radharani and her divine beauty is so great that even Krishna's heart is sold out. Even Krishna's heart melts by Srimati Radharani. It is said when a child is naughty, naturally the father becomes angry on the child. But sometimes the child is a bit naughty, he does some mischievous activity. When the father is taking the chastising rod to beat up the child, what the child does? He runs to the mother. Because he knows that if I go and take... Sometimes the child goes and hides behind the mother's sari. You've seen that? The father is searching, hey, where is he? Get him, you know. He's taking the stick in hand. And then he finds that this fellow is hiding behind the sari of the mother, then he cannot beat him, beat the child. And then she also knows very expertly how, when the father is angry, how to pacify him, how to make him peaceful. Say some nice things by which the husband's anger is appeased. So he throws away the stick. And when he is sitting peacefully and hearing, then she will cajole him and say sweet words to him. And along with that she will say, kindly forgive this fellow, naughty fellow. He will not do it again. So very easily the mother is able to pacify the father. So that's why the children take shelter of the mother. Mother is considered to be more compassionate. In the same manner, in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they worship the mother Lakshmi, like we worship Srimati Radharani. So to earn her favor, because Krishna, although he is supreme controller, supreme God, in the scriptures he has expressed, and it is proved by his pastimes, that there is one weakness that Krishna has. If you can know the weakness of a very big person, it's a big advantage, isn't it? You can catch him where he has weakness. His weakness is he becomes servant of someone who loves him. That means love is such a powerful force that even God can be captured or subdued by love. Can understand? And the personification of all love is Srimati Radharani. Anywhere you find any trace of love, that love is a reflection or manifestation from the personality of Srimati Radharani. So her devotion and love for Krishna is like an ocean. And Krishna is certainly purchased with that devotion. And Lord Krishna himself expresses in the scriptures that anyone who loves him and serves him and surrenders to him and begs for his mercy, prays for his mercy, then Krishna has to lend himself to that person. In fact, the kind of love or devotion the devotees have in their hearts, any devotee has in their hearts, is actually coming from Srimati Radharani only. She is the sum total of all devotion and we are borrowing a bit of devotion from her. All the jivas have some minute quantity of bhakti in their hearts. And this can be easily seen. Like there is a story of one Muni Kumar, this boy, his mother was a very great devotee of Krishna. And this small boy was going to a Gurukul in the neighborhood, but later on for higher education he had to go to a faraway Gurukul and he had to go through a forest. So he was a lonely son for his mother, and the mother told the boy, don't worry, when you have to walk through the forest and go to the other school, you won't face any dangers. Lord will protect you. But the boy over a period of time started crying and weeping. He said, I won't go. Because every day I have to go through the forest. Sometimes I hear the sounds of lions and elephants roaring. I am very afraid. Mother, I won't go to school. So then the mother told him, why do you have to have any fear? You have an elder brother, Gopal, who always protects whenever anyone is in danger. And she said, he has always protected me and he'll protect you also. And he asked, who is this Gopal? She gave a beautiful description of his elder brother, how he is Shyam Varna. He has the color of a fresh monsoon cloud. His hairs are blackish locks of curly hair are extremely beautiful. And he wears a very beautiful tilak of kasturi. And his eyes are like lotus petals. And his lips are like bimba fruit. And she said, he is so enchanting. The very sight of his beautiful face will at once eradicate all your fears and miseries. If you just behold his form. He wears a very beautiful Vaijanti mala around his neck. He always carries a flute on which he plays. And he wears a pitambar, which is dazzling golden color dhoti. He wears. And he wears a nupur in his legs. And if you hear the sound of his flute, it will be so maddening. You will be absorbed in remembering him and you will forget all your fears. And in this way she was glorifying the sweet nature of Krishna. So when the boy heard this description, he was amazed. Oh really, you never told me till now that I have a brother like that. So then he was going in the forest. One day when he faced fears like this, he called out Krishna's names. And Krishna appeared there immediately. And he held him by his hand and he took him. So the story goes like this, how whenever he had a fear or danger, he would call and Krishna would come. And he felt in the company of his elder brother, he had no fears. He was always protected, this boy. So one day when his guru was celebrating Guru Purnima, all the boys had to bring some gift. So he went home and his mother was sick in the evening. He thought, I'll tell her tomorrow. And tomorrow also she was sick, next day also. And he couldn't carry anything. But then when he called out Gopal, Gopal gave him some very nice pot full of nectar. So he took that nectar and gave the teacher. The teacher was putting it in big vessels and the nectar was constantly coming out of that small vessel. So teacher thought it is something strange. So he called the boy and asked, hey, who gave you this? And he admitted, this was given by Gopal, my elder brother. So he asked, who is this Gopal? Then he gave the description. Teacher said, really? And teacher immediately related it to the scriptures. In the scriptures, there is a description about Krishna. How, as Brahma describes, Venu Panantam Aravindadalayataksham Barhavatam Samasitam Budasundarangam Kandarpakotikamaniya Visheshashobam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami Alola Chandra Kalasad Vanamalya Vamsi Ratnangadam Pranaya Kelikala Vilasam Shamam Tribhanga Lalitam Niyata Prakasham Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. This is by Brahma. Description of Krishna's form. How he wears a very beautiful Vaijayanti mala. How he plays on his flute. He wears a beautiful peacock feather. He has lotus like petals. And his sham in color. He has a Kastubha mani. He has a Sivacha chinha in the chest. So when he heard about Gopal, he understood that how is this small boy able to have connection with such great supreme God. So he was very surprised. He said, really, Gopal gave you? Now I can understand that this must be given by Gopal, otherwise it cannot perform such a miracle. Then he said, okay, so you say that time to time you see him. So I will come with you and you call Gopal. I would like to see him also. So the teacher was very interested. So he went with the boy. And the boy, as usual, innocently called. He shouted Gopal's name again and again. Absolutely no response this time from Krishna. Then the teacher said, I will hide behind a bush and you go alone and call. So he hid behind a bush and the boy called Gopal very loudly. And then the Akashvani came. Oh, my dear Rangan brother, I only used to come whenever you call me because your mother is my great devotee. Just to favor her, I was coming and taking care of you. On her desire, I was taking care of you. But I never give my darshan in front of anyone who is faithless. Krishna said, and then Krishna stopped speaking. So when the teacher heard those words, he broke into tears. He said, alas, how unfortunate I am, that I am a Brahmana teacher, but I have no devotion to Krishna. All my study of the scriptures is simply scholarly, and I have not a tinge of devotion in my heart. On the other hand, this small boy, owing to his complete faith in Krishna, and having a mother who is a great devotee of Krishna, he could get darshan of Krishna face to face, and he could talk to Krishna. He could walk with Krishna, and he got this pot of nectar, mercy from Krishna. So the teacher was calling himself. So we can understand from this how Krishna becomes a servant of his devotee's love. It's called as a prem pujari. He's saying now, Ruk Ruk Sak Vidur Gar Khayo Duryodhan Ke Bhog Nakayo Aise Prem Pujari Radhe Sham 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 Madhava Madana Murari Radhe Sham Sham Sham. So that song we sing, Ruk Sak Vidur Gar Khayo. So Krishna goes to the house of Vidura and he simply eats the banana peel. On the other hand, he doesn't want to eat the chappan bhog offered by Duryodhana. So the innumerable pastimes in the scriptures show that Krishna is conquered by love of his devotee. Like Prabhupada tells the incident about this President Gladstone. Although he was the most busy man in the whole country and he had no time for anybody, sometimes there would be a queue of hundreds of people waiting to meet him. And he was attending one issue after another issue. He was very, very busy. But one time when a man slightly opened the door and he peeped to see how busy is Gladstone, what did he see? He saw his own child riding on his back like an elephant. Taking a stick, the boy was like beating Gladstone on either side, and Gladstone was moving around like an elephant all around the president's room. Like that. So Prabhupada says a story to show, of course God is busy with many things, but he is not too busy to exchange love with his devotees. When it comes to love of his devotee, Krishna is ready to sell himself. The devotee is able to purchase Krishna with his love. So as we said, this is Krishna's weakness, which means if someone loves him, then that love is very compelling for Krishna. He cannot say no. He has to bend himself. For example, if you see the 7th chapter, Krishna says, Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritano arjuna artho jigyasa ratarthi jnani cha bharatarshubha. Four kinds of people come to me, Arjuna. Krishna is telling. Those who are distressed, desirer of wealth, those who are inquisitive, and those who are in knowledge. And then he's saying, Tesham jnani nitya yukta eka bhakta vishishyate jnanohi prityartam. Aham satya mama priya. Amongst these people, I like the fourth one. One who is in knowledge, who understands who is Krishna and is developing devotion to Krishna, eka bhakta vishishyate. Fixed attention. But then, you see what Krishna says? Udara sarva evaite, he says. Jnani tvatvaiva mematam. He's saying, all these four people are very nice people, he's saying. They are magnanimous souls. What is the word Krishna uses? Udara. Udara means magnanimous souls. Now somebody may say, these are all mixed devotees. They are coming with dirty desires. They are saying artho, jignyasu, artharthi. They are coming to Krishna for wealth, coming to Krishna for relieving their distress. How is Krishna calling them as udara? Yeah, he uses the word udara because Krishna loves anyone who comes to him, even with material desire. Such is his magnanimity. Like sometimes you see a child, he takes a chalk piece or something and takes a slate and he's just, you know, scribbling like this. And the mother becomes jubilant. She will take the slate and go and show it to everyone. See, my child has written A, A, E, E. And he would not have written anything, just he has done like this. Just put it like this, just moved it around like this. But she is very proud. And child speaks something, Abmama, ba ba ba, he'll say something. Her mother will say, hey, see, it's like our in our society, devotee mothers, your child is saying, Baba, he says, hey, my child is saying Prabhupada. <You know? laughs> See, just now he's such a small child. You know, they'll make it a very big issue. You know? Similarly, when these four people come to Krishna, Krishna makes a big issue out of it. He says, hey Arjuna, just look at these people, they are coming to me. They are coming and bowing down to me. And Arjuna is asking, hey, what Krishna? They are all material devotees. They are all materialistic devotees. They are coming to you for all material desires. And Krishna says, no, still they are very good. Because after all, they are coming to me. They want to strike a relationship with me. That means even if someone begins to strike a relation with Krishna, Krishna calls him as Udara. Udara Sarva Evete. Lord becomes overwhelmed. Even with someone who is beginning to consider striking relation. But most of the people, they go away. Once Krishna fulfills the desire, they go away. But still Krishna treats them with so much warmth. Of course, people like Dhruva Maharaj, they came with material desire and they never went back. They stayed with Krishna all through. But some souls may fulfill the desires and they may go away. Still Krishna calls them as Udara Sarva Evaite. This is the extent to which we can know how Krishna appreciates the living entity's effort to develop relationship with Him. That means the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna, His only eagerness is to simply exchange love with the infinite part and parcels, living entities. There is no other activity in the spiritual world. Lord's love for the devotees and devotees' love for the Lord, there is an exchange of love by the performance of various pastimes. And Lord wants the living entities to relish His pastimes, to be with Him. Just like a father needs the children to be with Him in order to experience joy. Prabhupada says, putrahinam griham shunyam. He says, like if a man and woman have married, sometimes you go to villages, this slogan is very famous. Like if you go to villages, sometimes a jamindar is a big man. He's got a big hall, a huge house. He's got hundreds of acres of fields. He has a lot of mango orchards, coconut trees and everything. There is no problem of money. No dearth of money, no dearth of food. Everything is coming. But if he doesn't have a child, so he's very morose. Simply husband and wife are looking at one another, they have no child. So the whole house appears empty. But as soon as the child is born in the house, there are so much festivities. The child is speaking broken words and is moving here and there, and the whole house becomes very colorful. That's what Chanakya says, putrahinam, gramshunam, he says. Similarly, Lord Krishna also feels that his real joy is when he is with the living entities, exchanging love as a friend, as a parent or as a lover. So spiritual world is beautified by the exchange of love between Krishna and his devotees. So Krishna doesn't want to see the living entities breaking the relation with him and going to a faraway place like the material world where they are struggling to enjoy independently. He's not at all happy with that. So he's very happy to see them returning back to him and exchanging love with him. So that is his desire also. From these verses you can easily see that. And as I said, this is weakness. If someone surrenders to Krishna and wants to again revive the love, immediately Krishna's heart becomes softened and he becomes very easily conquered. So any aspiring transcendentalist, if he knows this secret, the secret is not easily known. Krishna is never called as a Jnani Vatsal or a Yogi Vatsal. He is only called as Bhakta Vatsal. So Krishna is called as Bhakta Vatsal. If one knows this Bhakta Vatsalyata, nature of Krishna, if one knows that, then they can take full advantage of this tendency of Krishna. So as we said, although he is very powerful, he can do miracles for one who surrenders to him. Try to understand, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, that you cannot attain me by any amount of scholarship of the Vedic study. Naham Vedair, by Vedic study you cannot attain me. Na tapasa, by tapasya, penances. Naham Vedair, na tapasa, na dhanena, by giving any amount of charity. Na chejaya, by any amount of official worship that is performed. Like sometimes a big jamindar builds a big temple and then he arranges for a brahmana to worship so that people will come to know that I am a rich man and I have built a temple for the welfare of the society. Such official worship cannot attract Krishna. Or official performance of sacrifice like the yajnik brahmins did. That cannot attract Krishna. Shakya eva vidho drashtum drishtavanasimamyata bhaktya atvananyaya shakya ahamevam vidho arjuna jnatum drashtum cha tatvena praveshtum cha parantapa. He is saying bhaktya tu ananyaya shakya. Without bhakti no one can attain me, he says. Bhaktya mama vijanati yavan jaschasmi tatvatah, same truth. Bhaktya mam abhijanati, I am understandable Arjuna very easily. By how? Bhaktya. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan jaschasmi tatvatah. If you want to know me in tatvatah, in truth, what should you do? You should do bhakti for me, he says. And why should I know Krishna in tatvatah? Because janma karma chame divyam yevam yoveti tatvatah. Because if I know Krishna in tatvatah, about Krishna janma and karma as divya, as transcendental and divine, then what will happen to me? Tyaktva deham punar janma nayiti mameti sorjuna. You will not take birth again in this world. You will go back to him. So these verses clearly confirm that Krishna demands that the living entities do not tread any other path in understanding him, like the path of jnana or yoga or karma, hatha yoga or ashtanga yoga and all these things. Don't uselessly waste your time in those things. Better you simply do bhakti for me and you will understand me in tattvata and you will come back to me very easily. So these paths like jnana, yoga and all those paths, they are dependent on one's personal prowess, endeavor, austerity. And one tries to extricate the material existence and elevate oneself from the bodily platform by one's own effort. And it is not an easy thing. Even despite a lot of endeavor, the living entity can make a very minuscule progress towards the Supreme Truth by these methods. You can't make much progress. It's like, a child is in India, his parents are in America. So they come to India and then they go back. So child knows my parents are in America. Now if the child has to go to America, how can he go? Say, now the child thinks, okay, my parents are in Los Angeles. I'm going to go and meet them. Can child go himself? So try to understand what it would mean for the child to go himself to Los Angeles. That means from Kadakpur now he has to go to Calcutta first. First he has to go to the Kadakpur station, buy a ticket, go to Calcutta station. From there he has to find out the dum-dum, is it, airport? So he has to know the airport. So he has to go to the airport and find out what flights are available. Some jet airways or something. Get the number and everything. And first he has to get money also. He doesn't have money. He has to get money, pay the flight fare, board the plane. After going to America also. And there he has to find out where the parents are. How much probability you think the child has in reaching America safely? Yeah, it's almost an impossibility, we can say. Almost an impossibility. That a small boy can reach Los Angeles himself. Of course, he may not go himself. He may keep asking other people, hey, do you know how to go here, how to go there? And they may keep guiding him. Somebody may misguide him also in between. Isn't it? So, A child with enormous efforts cannot reach America himself. On the other hand, if the child does only one thing, he just calls his parents and he says, I can't live here in India, I want to be with you. Wherever you are, I want to be with you. Then if the parents decide to take him, just see the difference, what it makes. He just shows the hand and parents pick him up. And the mother or father, they take him on their shoulders. And he doesn't even have to see where am I going, whether I'm going by train or flight. He can go to sleep peacefully. He can just go to sleep on the shoulder of the mother or father. And they take him in the train, they take him in the flight. And then when the home comes in America, they'll wake him up. Hey, get up. He opens up, he finds himself in the house there. So this is the way the path of bhakti works. It's very simple. We just take shelter of Krishna. And he does the job for us very easily. That is why the code words or key words in the path of bhakti yoga are a devotee should beg, a devotee should pray, a devotee should hope that one day Krishna's mercy will come. So these are the key words. We should always beg for Krishna's mercy, Vaishnava's mercy. We should always learn to offer prayer. The power of prayer is so great that it can melt the heart of Krishna. It can draw the attention of Krishna very easily. Especially when a devotee prays, Krishna, I have no other shelter, you are the only shelter. And I don't want anything in this world, I want only you. Like yesterday we were singing those two songs, Gopinath, Mama Nivedana Shino. Here the devotee is so powerfully praying. And drawing Krishna's attention. He is saying in that song, you saw, isn't it? That I am a murgh. I am a murakati. He says, no? I am a fool. So I have turned my face away and I am going in the opposite direction. And what kind of master are you that you are allowing me to wander, you know, without chasing me? Isn't it? So if I go away from you, what is your duty? Your duty is to chase me and catch me by my neck and bring me back to proper track. No? And you have to give me the amrit. You have to give me the nectar of your lotus feet. And in this way, you should purify my heart. So when a devotee makes such loving demands, then Krishna becomes helpless. Then he has to oblige. And Krishna becomes obliged to such a devotee who prays. And if you are singing the Acharya's songs, then what happens? Krishna becomes doubly pleased because you are repeating the words of his devotees whom he loves very much. Already Krishna loves them very much. So when you sing that song, he becomes immediately attentive. Hey, I have heard this song sometime before. That Acharya sang for me. Yeah. And somebody singing the song. Let me find it. Who is this fellow who is so intelligent? He is following in the footsteps of my devotees. That means he must be a good fellow. That means Krishna assumes, if somebody is a follower of my devotee, he must be a very good person. Because he has complete faith in his devotees. So anybody becomes follower of his devotee, they are very intelligent according to Krishna's calculation. Prayer means, it's explained in the Gajendra Moksha in the beginning. All of you repeat this verse. Evam yavasito buddhya samadhaya mano hridi jajapa paramam japyam prajanmani anushikshitam. The Gajendra, when he was in trouble, what did he do? Evam vyavasito buddhya. With a fixed intelligence, he meditated on the Supreme Lord. Vyavasita buddhi. Vyavasayatmika buddhi. With that he meditated on the Supreme Lord. Samadhaya. Samadha means in samadhi state. Samadhi is the trance state. Samadhaya mano and hridi. With his mind and heart, both. He fixed. Heart is one step deeper than the mind. Heart means chitta, man means the mind. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says both. First he says, manmana bhava madbhukta, matmana. Engage your mind in thinking of me. But then later he says, in the 10th chapter he says, mat chitta, madgata prana, he says. My devotee's heart is engaged in loving me, he says. So, not only we should give our mind, we should also give our heart. Heart, you give only to those whom you love the most. You don't give it to anybody. You may give the mind. Mind, giving mind means giving attention. Giving heart means giving yourself completely. So it's not the same. No. First he says, at least please pay some attention to me, man mana, he says. But then he says, mat chitta. But my devotees not only pay attention to me, they give themselves to me completely. So, mano hridi, Gajendra engaged his mind and heart completely in remembrance of the Lord. Jajapa. Jajapa means he did jap. Like we do jap, he was also doing jap. What jap he did? Paramam japyam. Paramam means the supreme name of the Lord. Like he calls out later on, Narayana Akhila Guru, Bhagavan Namaste, he prays. Hey, O Lord Narayana, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavan Namaste, I do my namaskar to you. He's praying like that. So that is Jajapa Paramam Japyam. Prakjanmani. Prakjanmani means Purva Janma. From Purva Janma, he was Indradmana Raja. He was a great devotee. So Anushikshitam, he was trained in the previous life to be a devotee. Now that came to his help now. So he was calling out like this. He says, so this kind of call, a loud call coming from the soul, breaking through the material coverings, namely the gross and subtle body, and manifesting in the tongue of the devotee. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the chanting of Hare Krishna is a loud call or loud cry of the individual souls, which emanates from the soul and pierces through the grass and subtle coverings and dances in the tongue of a sincere chanter, he says, the holy name. So it's coming from the heart actually, of all of us. Although we may not even know it, or we may not see it. When you chant, it is not just coming in the tongue, it is a call coming from the soul. So that is the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is the greatest prayer amongst all the prayers. Because the word Hara is Radharani's very confidential name. One who has stolen the heart of Hari. And Krishna is all attractive Krishna. So when you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, so immediately the attention of the divine couple who are the presiding deities in the spiritual world, that is immediately drawn. And no mantra can take us to such a destination. There are many, many mantras. But this mantra can award us the love of the divine couple. Whereas many mantras can award you so many other benedictions. We are not after any benediction other than achieving this love for Krishna. So, a devotee should know this greatest secret that Krishna's weakness is that he becomes a servant of his devotee's love. So, the lesson we learn from this understanding is that a devotee, that a practitioner in the path of Bhakti Yoga should know that Krishna loves his devotees and we have to take their shelter and that will please Krishna. And we also understand because Krishna is conquered by love and devotion, it is better for us to beg for his mercy, to hope for his mercy and take his shelter and plead his shelter, and by doing that we can conquer him far more easily than going to Gangotri or Yamunotri and Badrinath, Kedarnath and torturing our body to get rid of the material body like the jnanis and yogis do. This is a much easier method and a very appropriate method for drawing the attention of the Supreme Truth. And people who have achieved such devotion, they have not only got out of the material world. Liberation is a byproduct of chanting of the holy name. Liberation is not a very great thing. Getting out of the material world is, it is a mukti, mukulitanjali, sevate asman. It is a mukti, mukti means liberation, mukulitanjali. With both her palms folded, she comes at the doorstep of a devotee and praying, Sir, I am ready to offer myself to you. And the bhakta says, no, don't disturb me. I don't want you, he says. He says, I am satisfied in bhakti, I don't want mukti, he says. A devotee says, I can be in hell or heaven, I don't care. Why? Because I have devotion to Krishna. If you have devotion to Krishna, you can even live in hell, you have no problem. Because the devotion to Krishna is so surcharging. Because if you are a devotee, for you there is no difference between hell or heaven or spiritual world. Because the devotion is so soothing to the heart that the external surroundings cannot affect your devotion. They cannot affect your consciousness. That's why he says, Narayana Parasarve Nakutaschana Bibhyati Swarga Apavarga Narakeshu Apitulyartha Darshana. Shiva said this about devotees. He said, Swarga Apavarga Naraka, they all are same for devotees. They, wherever you put them, they are happy. It doesn't make any difference. You put them in New York, they are happy preaching Krishna consciousness. Put them in Canada, or put them in Australia, put them in Russia, put them in India. A devotee is very happy. because he only wants to give Krishna to others, or he wants to hear about Krishna. He doesn't want anything. So then Krishna becomes captivated by such devotees. If Krishna likes even those who come to him for material desires, try to understand how much he must be loving those devotees like Prabhupada or previous acharyas, or anyone who goes to him simply out of love for Krishna and wants to give Krishna to others. He cannot estimate. Like Krishna told the gopis of Vrindavan, all of you love me from your heart. When I see your love, I cannot do anything but cry. He said, Napariyeham. I can offer the post of Indra to someone, I can offer the post of Brahma to someone, I can give a huge amount of gold and silver, or I can make one the adhipati of one universe also. But you people, you are loving me so much that none of these things are pleasing to you. So what can I do? I can only give myself to you. You take me. I am your property. And I have nothing to give. Be satisfied with your own devotion, he told them. So Krishna becomes really touched by the sincere devotion of such acharyas. And we are coming in Brahma Madhava Gaudi Sampradaya. And great acharyas in the line. And they all are very intelligent people. They are far more intelligent than jnanis and yogis. But why they are not performing Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga? Bhaktivinoda Thakur has spoken so deeply about Ashtanga Yoga. Yama, Niyama, Pranayama. He can give hundreds and thousands of lectures on Ashtanga Yoga path if you want. But after knowing all of that, he casted it away. He threw it off. And he is giving songs on glorification of Krishna in the mood of devotion. Because the acharyas know very well that no matter how much Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga I do, no one can attract Krishna. But Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti is the only powerful weapon which softens the Lord's heart. Because Bhakti means Radharani, nobody else. The personification of devotion is Srimati Radharani. So, and Srimati Radharani is actually the love of Krishna in Krishna's heart which manifests in this particular form of Srimati Radharani. The Haladini Shakti. Amongst the three, Sandini, Samvit, Hladini. Hladini Shakti is the pleasure potency of Krishna, which gives Krishna the greatest immense pleasure, that devotional attitude, which is blended with humility, tolerance, compassion, sincerity. So all these qualities are blended in Srimati Radharani. So if you read Nectar of Devotion, qualities of Srimati Radharani and qualities of Krishna, you'll be very amazed. So we should be very intelligent to capture that portion of the Vedas or the religious principles which can very easily lead us back to the spiritual world and not get stuck up in so many other thorny bushes in the forest. Vedas are very vast, like oceanic. We should capture that portion of the Vedas which can very easily soften our heart and help us develop the seed of devotion that we have got from the Vaishnavas and grow it in a very big way, so that it will produce the fruit of Krishna Prem at the feet of Krishna in the spiritual world. So the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra should be done in this prayerful mood of begging and praying and hoping that please Krishna, I am your servant, some or other I have fallen into this material world. So this prayer, Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram Patitam Maam Vishame Babam Budav Kripaya tava pada pankaja stita dule sadrisham vichintaya. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was the biggest of the big scholars. He was the most intelligent of all intelligent people. But you can see the Shikshashtakam are the only 8 verses that he wrote. There you can see in what way he is approaching Krishna. Shikshashtakam is nothing but heart of Srimati Radharani. Whatever she feels in her heart, he has poured out in the form of prayers. So one can repeat these prayers and contemplate on the meaning of Shikshashtakam. By doing that regularly, one's heart will become softened. And one's devotion to Krishna will awaken in the heart. And one will learn that devotional attitude. When one captures the devotional attitude, it's very easy to make progress. Some people say, I cannot control my mind, I cannot control my senses. One doesn't even think of mind as senses. Once his devotion captures the heart of a devotee, then devotee hardly thinks of what is mind, what is senses, what is material acquisition. Devotee becomes oblivious to all these things. As Prahlad said, Tvad Virya Gayana Mahamrita Magna Chitta, he said. You are as if you are drowned in a ocean of ecstasy. And then one forgets the whole material world. Material world doesn't exist for you, even for a grihastha. Somebody has a wife, children, family, business, everything. All the things become oblivious when he chants the holy name, when he chants Shikshashtakam. That is the power of devotion. So let us learn to appreciate this power of devotion and take full advantage of it when we are reciting the holy name. Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Let's offer our humble obeisances and to all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord who are just like